Our guest now is the ultimate Aussie all-rounder, but with things creative rather than cricket. Nash Edgerton's worked as a stuntman on films including The Matrix Trilogy, The Thin Red Line, and has doubled for Ewan McGregor in two of the Star Wars prequels. He directed all episodes of the black comedy drama Mr. In Between and two feature films, 2008's The Square and Gringo in 2018, which starred Charlize Theron, David Oyelowo, and his younger brother, Joel Edgerton, our guest's younger brother, Joel Edgerton. Nash Edgerton has made music videos for Bob Dylan, Brandon Flowers and Empire of the Sun. His latest work, Shark, will be part of the Show Me Shorts Festival, kicking off in cinemas nationwide and online next week. It's part of a trilogy along with Spider and Bear, and could probably be described as extremely black comedy. Nash is with us from god-awful early hours in Australia, thanks to daylight saving. Good morning.
Morning, how are you?
I'm really good. I've just watched Shark and I laughed, and that's it's a line call sometimes, isn't it? I also had a flashback to some scuba diving a while ago with some sharks, and suffice to say, I'm glad I hadn't seen this film first. let's talk about this comedy trilogy. Just explain a little bit more about the inspiration for these. The latest of the three is Shark. But where did you start? Did you start with a character, an individual?
Yeah, I had with Spider, which was the first one. Yeah, I just like the idea of this guy, you know, in a relationship where his partner doesn't get his sense of humor, and where that could go if, you know, he's doing things that he thinks are funny and she doesn't find them funny. And so it's just, you know, what happens when you're playing pranks and they're not being received well, and how badly can they go?
Is that an important part of what can be shocking kind of violence or shocking kind of events, being funny? There needs to be a kind of a haplessness to the situation or a haplessness to the character and the character's motives.
Yeah, I guess, well, because he's it's all very well-meaning, you know. He's doing it out of love and affection, but they're just misguided. And because of that, you know, they end in tragic events.
I'm laughing now. And that's kind of it, isn't it? If we didn't like him, if we feared him, if we thought there was a nastiness to his behaviour, we might find it more difficult to laugh. But it's coming from a good place. Did you model him on anyone or on bits of people? How did you dream him up?
He's a lot me, I think. I had a rubber spider as a kid that I used to prank my mum with, which is where Spider came from. You know, it was a mixture of that and, you know, my brother and I were in a car when we were younger, and my brother was driving, and, you know, Australia, we have the Huntsman spider that's notorious for being in cars, and he was driving and there was one crawling up his pants on the freeway, and he suddenly just lost control of the car, and I had to grab the wheel and pull the car over, and he just jumped out in the traffic trying to get the spider off his pants. And I realized, wow, people will risk their lives to get away from a spider here, you know. And so that's where part of that idea came from. And then with the character, with continuing the trilogy, I think I just liked the idea of this guy getting older but not really growing up.
He seems to have finally found his person in Sophie, though, played by Rose Byrne, I think. And
yes.
And this is kind of an evolution of him as a character before the inevitable happens, I guess. You're really fond of him. It's interesting how you might become attached to a character, but still want to take him through some kind of arc, some kind of life arc.
Yeah, well, my friend David and I, who wrote it with me, we like the idea that, you know, he finally meets someone that that gets his sense of humor. And then where could that go if they're both into pranking? And it's interesting because once you have someone that understands his sense of humor, then there's the risk that they just assume he's pranking whether he's is or not. And that they're trying to one-up each other.
In 12 minutes, it's all on. We'll talk about the short film challenge in a moment. The other thing I think you've just illustrated with your story about your brother is that you really do wonder how we survive as much as we do. Those sliding doors moments in any of our lives, right?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. You know, some people meet their demise by the most silly of circumstances, you know.
I used to keep a file with a friend. It was a bit nasty, and I'm not sure about even sharing it here, but we used to have strange ways to die on holiday file, because it always seems maybe it's because it's summer, right? And so you're and there's nothing in the news. There's just whatever odd thing happened to someone somewhere. But we really do seem to find strange ways just out of our comfort zone or just somewhere unfamiliar. And there, but for the luck of the draw, goes any of us. And maybe that's why it makes us laugh, Nash.
I think knowing it's inevitable, you have to have a sense of humor about it, right?
That's true. Very true. That's why we laugh at funerals as well, I suppose. Exactly. Or in any other number of situations. Let's talk about the short film as a genre, because it seems particularly challenging, not dissimilar to a short story, except perhaps there's even more going on. It might be 9 minutes, it might be 12 minutes. It's incredible what can be achieved in a story arc in that time. And what are some of the keys to that?
Well, I think, you know, like short films, you know, as you say, as a genre, they're kind of unique. You know, one of the reasons I think I keep coming back to them occasionally is they're so different to feature films. I think it's like short stories and novels. You know, there are, you know, it's like a campfire story or a ghost story, or, you know, they're just like these contained events. And there's something really attractive about them to me when they're done well.
Does it pay to ease up on dialogue and second, to establish what's going on in a relationship early? Is it about mood quite often?
Yeah, I think so. And you're really just sort of jumping into the middle of a moment in people's lives and, you know, getting to know them through the interaction. I just, you know, I think this I've just seen so many unique short films from all around the world, and, you know, a lot of time, because of the nature of them, language is not really a problem. You know, you can follow what's happening, whether there's dialogue or not, a lot of time in human interaction.
Does there need to be a problem? The old story about all drama needing conflict, but in some ways, does there need to be a predicament often with these films?
I think, you know, sometimes, but not always, you know, you can still, you know, you can have, but there is something joyful about people going through predicaments, you know, experiencing what someone else is going through and how they navigate it.
And is that twist always almost like a Roald Dahl twist somewhere? In your case, sometimes a little more in the face.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, you think about, you know, as kids, most of the stories you read or get read or are told are short, you know, like it's all part of storytelling as you're growing up, you know, fairy tales and, like I said, campfire stories, they're all quite short. You know, I think that genre of storytelling is something we all grow up with. Cautionary tales and fables and
don't put your elbow out the windows, the car I can still remember my mother telling this. Talk about a short. There's a short film for you. Has anyone ever put their elbow out the window, like just leaned it out the window, and someone's driven past and taken their elbow off? I don't think it's ever happened, but we've all been told it has, right? That's the ultimate short story right there, or short film right there. You're noted for your use of what I've dubbed comedic violence, and as with many creative endeavours at the moment, do you have to tread a line with that? Things that we used to instinctively laugh out at, do we now analyse from a different angle? And if so, what's the line you're walking?
Well, I think, you know, because I've shot the films like they're a relationship drama, the physical violence that happens, you're not expecting, which is what adds to the shock of it. I think the idea that, you know, it just feels like an intimate drama in a car, or like in Spider, or, you know, this couple, you know, one-upping each other at home in Shark, and slowly builds to an event. And just by the nature of the way it's shot, you're just not expecting it to be what it becomes, which I think is fun when you're watching it with an audience.
You're looking for that reaction. Do you get mixed reactions? Do some people laugh and others not?
Oh, yeah. I had a screening of Spider, especially in Sundance, where like the hot, because the audience reaction is quite visceral. And I had someone in a Q&A say to me, is there something wrong with me? Because everyone was laughing and I found that really disturbing. And I think I said, there's nothing wrong with you. There's something wrong with everyone else here.
It's just how you look at it. Another though, that's really interesting because it's a bit different, but it still would fall into the category of comedic violence, at least for some, is Mr. In Between. Mm. This was a black comedy action series about a hitman, and it ran for 3 seasons and had a cult following. What was this sort of alchemy there? Again, was it that part of you just liked this character, despite his completely random violence? Did you make him likable or somehow relatable?
Well, I think the fact that he has, you know, like he definitely has a moral center. It's probably just left of center. And everyone, you know, he treats his job as much as his job is, you know, on the wrong side of the law, it's just a job. But he has a family life, and he has friendships, and he has relationships. And the fact that, you know, all of those, that other side of his life is very relatable, then you can't help but like this guy, because he's, you know, again, he's doing what he thinks is right. And he's not just black and white bad guy, you know. And I think the fact that you can relate to his family life, you can relate to his relationships, you can relate to his friendships, you can't help but go, you know, on this journey with him and somewhat like him, even though he's doing some things that you probably don't agree with at times.
It's a little bit like the recipe The Sopranos got right, isn't it? It's a very similar similar concept. And who doesn't want to watch a mockumentary that follows a Melbourne hitman?
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
Let's look at some of the other aspects of the career, Nash. Nash Edgerton is our guest. We're talking about the short films at the moment. You're listening to 9 to Noon on RNZ National. We mentioned your brother, Joel, and you were talking about growing up. And look, this career, as we said, is everything from stuntman through to directing films. And we'll talk a little bit more about what you've done with musicians as well, and music videos. But was this part of growing up, the storytelling, the performing, was that part of the development of each of you that led you into creative endeavours?
I think so, yeah. We, you know, we grew up kind of, you know, right next to the bush, and you know, I think when I was about 10, my dad got a video camera, and Joel and I would play with that and make stuff in the backyard. And, you know, we were very much into watching movies and stuff. And it just, you never really think of that's what your job's going to be or your career's going to be when you're just playing, but it just became a something that we were both very into. And then when you leave school and you got to do stuff, you got to make a living. The idea of getting to work on films and TV shows didn't seem real until we had to come up with what we wanted to do. And it just, I think it became very kind of organic in that way.
Working as a stuntman for years, look at this film list, Matrix trilogy, Star Wars, Zero Dark Thirty, The Wolverine. I've asked this of others, people like Kiwi stuntwoman Dana Grant, how do you start a career like this? Because it ain't as easy as it looks, and things can go wrong, and quite seriously wrong. How did you get into it, and then how did you learn the skills of the trade?
It was very much, look, I played a lot of sport and was very physical as a kid. And then I literally, someone told a story at a dinner I was at, and they said the word stunt, and I was like, it was like a light bulb moment. I think I was 17 or 18, and I was like, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to be a stunt man. And I went home, and it was before the internet, so I looked up stunt in the phone book and found a phone number for an agency that represented stunt people. And I'd made my mind up. I was like, I just called them first thing Monday, and asked them how do I be a stunt man. And I think they told me how difficult it was to get into and tried to talk me out of it. I think, because most things in the film industry, you gotta, there's no set path. You kind of have to be determined and want to do it. And I just called every week, saying I'm serious about this. And in terms of how I learned, I eventually got to, go on a film set and watch some people do it and got their numbers. And it was like old-fashioned apprenticeship. I just learned as I went. I went on film sets and made coffee and carried people's equipment, and just every chance I got was getting on a film set to, learn. And that's kind of how it started for me.
Do you need a certain chutzpah? Do you need to be at a certain stage of your life or career to do some of what's needed here? Because it's not just the gumption to do stuff. It's to know what when to rein it in as well, I guess, right? And is there kind of a peak in the career of a stunt person?
Yeah, I guess so. Like, it's being a stunt performer is it's quite a mixture of things, Like, you have to be adaptable. You're having to be creative. You have to be able to perform in front of camera, but you also have to be able to, do a lot of the prep work that, there's rehearsals and prep and figuring out how to, it's kind of creating an illusion. You create it. You're trying to do something that's, find a physical action that's repeatable, that looks dangerous, but is safe to repeat. And, it can be performed by you and possibly part of it by the actor or all of it by the actor if possible. You're really interacting with most departments. It's been funny, like going into directing, it's quite similar in a lot of ways. It's a lot of problem solving, and I think I really enjoy the challenge of it.
Your directing debut was with The Square in 2008, and this was written by Joel. And, what is the dynamic of you two working together? I think you share a house in LA. You've worked together many times. You directed him also in Gringo in 2018. It's a situation where there could be friction, right? Fraternal friction. But do you actually work very well together?
Yeah, we do. I think we got all our fighting out of the way when we were about 12. I think we have skills that complement each other, and yeah, we have a lot of fun working together. It's just, I love my brother, and I feel like, I really appreciate his talent, and it's just, yeah, it's a good working relationship.
The film's had good reviews often. Certainly that was the case with The Square, and we mentioned earlier that Mr. In Between had a, you know, a kind of a cult following, but three seasons and that was it. And do you choose the stuff that you really enjoy as a genre or as a way of filmmaking? You're not interested in making the sort of the cheap, cheesy formula Hollywood stuff that might have on TV or elsewhere have got you more eyeballs or lasted for longer? Are you choosy about what you do?
I'm definitely picky, yeah. I guess you just gravitate towards stuff that interests you, and so far that's kind of been the way I've gone. You know, Mr. In Between, I was involved in for a long time trying to get that made. Like, it took us over 10 years to get it made, mainly because people wouldn't let me cast Scott, who plays Ray in the show, because he hadn't done much in front of camera before. But there was something about him on camera. I just thought he needed to play the character. You know, he wrote the scripts, and I liked the idea of him being someone you hadn't seen before, because that character is supposed to be someone you don't know. I've just sort of gravitated towards those kind of things, but that's not to say I won't go down a different path at some point. You know, you just try and make things that you feel like you can bring something to.
Well, you've worked with an absolute great in Bob Dylan. We mentioned the music videos. You've also worked with Brandon Flowers and Empire of the Sun. But there's been four videos with Dylan, and you've taken him some places. You've brought together this kind of, as we said, comedic gangstery or comedic violent kind of line, humorous line that you run, and some of the characters in the underworld that you may imagine in other work, and you've brought that to some of your work with Dylan. How did this collaboration start?
I think his manager saw a short film I made, and that's how I got to pitch on one of the videos initially. And then you know, like most music videos, a number of filmmakers pitch an idea, and that's how that started. And they, you know, responded to the first one, and then, you know, I think they liked the end result of it, so I got asked to do another one. And yeah, so I did four of his in a row. That was so unexpected to me too, to get to have that collaboration, but it was really fun to do. You know, I got to put my dad in one of the videos. He was, playing his music all the time when I was growing up. I knew it was one of his favorite artists, so it was really quite awesome to be able to involve him in one of the videos.
That is best son ever moment, that is. Beyond Here Lies Nothing, from the 2009 album Together Through Life. And this is, you know, it's a Dylan song, but this video is your work, you know, on the table, putting him in character and then having this crazy twist at the end. Like, how did you work with them? Did you physically sit in a room with them? Were you working by distance? What was the creative experience for you?
It was kind of different each time. The first time, because he wasn't in Beyond Here Lies Nothing, so I didn't really meet him in person until we did Must Be Santa. So the first one was just like back and forth with, you know, treatments and working on the idea through, you know, record company and management and stuff.
It's a pretty special experience to have. And have you just found, did you find him with the sense of humour you were looking for? Sense of humour and also the sense of that story arc that, again, can be told in a matter of minutes if it's done well. Did you find a kindred spirit?
I think so. I think so. I think that's what happens in collaboration. You find people, you know, you gravitate towards people that, you know, you get, or they get you, or you, you know, enjoy the sense of humor. It's the same with Mr. In-Between. It's the same about the combination of Scott and I. We get each other's sense of humor. You know, I think most collaborations that work in some way have that in common, that you have a tonality or a sense of humor or something that you both appreciate, and you know, and that inspires ideas and makes the collaboration work, you know.
Well, Nash, thank you. And of course, it did have to happen, didn't it? Someone has emailed saying, elbow off did happen, the elbow out the car window. It happened to my barber while driving his Zephyr convertible, causing him to be jobless. This is from Graham.
Wow.
And someone else saying, elbow off, oops, it was caused by a tram, not another car. There you go.
Wow. Wow.
Our mums were right. Nash Edgerton, thanks very much. And the Show Me Shorts Festival, have a look at the link on our homepage to see his work and others coming to the festival.